Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. There is an incredible facility right here in downtown Toronto that is helping on the front lines and is doing incredible innovative research. They are a facility that treats everybody with dignity, and they need your help. May 6th to 12th is Mental Health Week. If this matters to you, help CAMH. There's no better place for your resources. Go to camh.ca/CanadaLand and donate now. Help CAMH treat addiction and build hope. Deidre Olson, freelance journalist in Toronto.
Hello.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Nice to meet you in person.
Likewise.
Today we're going to talk about the Vice Admiral Norman case. That went well.
Very well.
And serial killers. We love talking about them almost as much as we love disparaging their victims.
Mm-hmm.
Glad to have you here for it.
Thank you.
This episode of Canada Land Shortcuts is brought to you by Reva Seth, Adam Nickel, John Gemmel, Barbara Cron, Darren Carlson, Jeff Pellick, Brandon Lefebvre, and Susie O'Brien.
I support Canada Land because we listen to a bunch of different news sources in my house, and it seems that only Canada Land is trying to cut through the boilerplate slogans of people in power and the polite journalism that allows those slogans to stand mostly uncontested. I also appreciate that Canada Land's guest contributors have the backbone to challenge Jesse and to offer additional insights that we just don't hear from the established media outlets.
This episode is also brought to you by Hover. Building one's online brand has never been more important. Deidre, don't you know? You are a freelance journalist.
Yeah, my shit posting brand.
Do you have a website? What is your URL?
DeidreOlson.com.
You got your name.com.
Yeah,
that's excellent.
Yeah.
I don't have JesseBrown.com. There's an outdoor supply store in, like, I don't know, Virginia or something, and Jesse Brown there has, he's got my URL. I've got the CA.
Oh, that's unfortunate. Well, I mean, I guess you could throw like the middle initial in there or do the .ca if you want to be edgy.
Yeah, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, when you've got an idea, if it's your name, whatever it is, your online brand is important. You need the URL, and Hover is the place where you want to get your domains from. It's the place where I got domains and email before they were a sponsor of the show. It's where I went because, like, the GoDaddies of the world and companies like that are, what's the word? Gross. They're gross companies in their marketing. They're gross companies in their practices. They try to upsell you. Hover doesn't do that. They believe that people who listen to the show might be interested in a .me domain. Is that an insult? Should we be insulted that they think that? Nevertheless, at Hover, it's the place to go. Get 10% off of all domain extensions for your first year when you go to hover.com/CanadaLand. Deidre, you have written up your take on this particular piece of reporting in not just the National Post, but it ran in papers across post-media, but it also plays into like larger trends that are kind of disturbing, and you've provided a thoughtful piece of writing on this. Can you give us the background here? What prompted this?
Absolutely. So my friend was Andrew Kinsman's neighbor, and I saw her post a tweet of a headline that read Bruce Kinsman. And I was like, what's that mean? So I read further into it, and it turns out that a National Post article had come out with a poorly copy-edited headline. And the story just so happened to be about newly released records detailing that Bruce MacArthur's eighth and final victim, Andrew Kinsman, that in his personal life, he was interested in serial killers and serial killers that fit the profile of Bruce MacArthur. So it was an entire story built around one man's interest in true crime. And I suppose, you know, the irony that he just happened to be killed by a serial killer after the fact. It was particularly awful because the headline had mistakenly said Bruce Kinsman.
And the full headline that originally ran was Bruce Kinsman was fascinated by serial killers before he became Bruce MacArthur's eighth victim, before they corrected it to Andrew Kinsman.
Mm-hmm. But it was hours and hours and hours that the headline stayed up on the Ottawa Citizen and the Vancouver Sun. I don't know how many other papers, but it was, you know, like it was all day long, despite people tweeting at publications saying, can you please fix this? This is very offensive. It reads like you're saying that Andrew Kinsman was a co-conspirator of Bruce MacArthur or somehow culpable in his own death.
And I think that one thing that you brought our attention to is that this kind of plays into a lot of stereotypes and prejudices around gay men, and like the idea that his fascination with serial killers is like, well, we can distance ourselves from that. It's like, well, I'm not fascinated with serial killers. So it kind of like dehumanizes the victim, who then they kind of insult as well, and just like actually conflating his name with Bruce MacArthur's in the headline.
Exactly.
I want to, like, I'm not playing the devil's advocate in this. I think that you make a really salient point, and I think that there's a cause for introspection here. I'm also just aware of how this story is getting reported and how any story of this magnitude would get reported. Like, the background of this that you can decode from reading this piece by Adrian Humphreys, who's a, career crime reporter. There was a legal challenge brought by Post Media and other media companies to unseal court documents. Like, there are so many reporters on this story. This is a major story. It is not a story where the police have offered a lot of transparency, and the media is doing what it should do in trying to get as much information as possible. That's our job, right? It is also a story that has international attention. It is also a story that is invariably going to be turned into movies and shit like that. And there is a race on for like the gory details. And aside from this question of like how we depict gay men when they are victimized in this way, which I think actually plays into why this happened in the first place, like as a certainty, it was all going to get reported. You know, it was all coming out.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a question of editorial packaging. You know, like, I think
agree.
it's like context and framing. And in this case, yeah, the copy itself is kind of lurid and like trying to draw this connection. And then the headline just takes it. Like, often headline writers are like, can I distill this into its essence? And then they go too far, or they get something wrong. And then I think it just gets really gross. So this was sort of like this is a terrible story.
Yeah.
But it made me think about, like, I think you can commend Canada for, the Canadian press doesn't do the glorifying killers thing as badly as the States, right? Like, my first experience in a news organization, I guess you could call it that, I was an intern when I was 16 at Q107, at the time Toronto's Classic Rock, I think. And I was in the like mailroom. I was the mailroom boy. And like, I found a stack of pages that was a transcription of everything in the Homolka Bernardo videotapes.
Oh, wow.
Everything that was under publication ban that the media never ran. And I was like traumatized. Like, I was transfixed. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
I read every word of it. But I was like, I can't believe that this is like you'd think that this would be a movie. And, you know, we don't have videotape or even audio tape in courtrooms. We don't have a Hollywood machine that makes movies out of these people. Sometimes, like, I think they made some kind of a shitty movie of Bernardo eventually. But it doesn't, like, you know, I just watched like the Ted Bundy thing on Netflix.
Exactly.
And this guy, like, you know, he was a narcissist. He loved the attention. He might have gotten off on the attention as much as he got off on the crimes themselves. And here we are, like, paying him off,
yeah,
you know, after he's dead.
Mm-hmm. And 30 years after.
Yeah. And further disrespecting his victims, who are just mm-hmm. always treated like dirt in these. But, like, I guess it made me feel like, huh, you had me scratching my head. Like, you're right. This was a terrible story. But, like, what's going to happen and what should happen? Like, we can't go back to those days. It's not like there's too many true crime podcasts. There's too, like, people are now like killing people live on the internet. Like, you know, I don't know. You really actually got me trying to figure out what the best.
Yeah. I think there needs to be more conversation about the ethical consumption of true crime, because there's the kind of true crime that digs into oppressive corrupting police and justice systems and forces us to reconcile with that and look at why people are put in jail and incarcerated for decades when there was little to no evidence and it was a bias by a racist police and justice system. And, you know, it was a person of color. It was a black man. Or, you know, in the case of Serial, it was Adnan Syed. We were looking at those forces and it made us like critically think about the justice system. I mean, that is a powerful thing to communicate. And then there's the kind that gawks at the salacious details of, you know, terrible things that have happened, you know, romanticizing a white serial killer as, you know, charming and handsome, and he had us all fooled and he was killing these poor, nameless, faceless women. They're just dead women on the side of the street. And then we blow up these images of these men and sexualize them and make them sexy and glorify them. So I think there's, I think it forces us to reconcile with this ethical consumption and to look at, you know, we can editorialize this, we can package this, and we can feed into narratives. You know, we imbue meaning in the things that we write. It has huge consequences on public perception. So if you're writing a story and you're coming up with this, you know, expose of Andrew Kinsman's interests as, you know, oh, he shared the same interests as the serial killer. Well, there's tons of people out there that are, you know, strangely fascinated with serial killers.
The whole society. This
that,
is like
that doesn't
the most
turn...
mainstream genre you could possibly imagine. You know, it's like, it's not like a weird quirk, but like, look, I'm of two minds. I mean, I agree 100%. Like, Justin Ling's doing a good job of like, well, like, if you want to look at the Bruce MacArthur story, like predators target the vulnerable. They target people who the police aren't going to care about. So let's have a conversation about that. Let's have a conversation about how it was Andrew Kinsman, the white victim, who led to him ultimately being like, there's an ethical way. And you can kind of purpose people's salacious interest towards actually engaging with real topics. You know, we try to do that. I think that's, you know, at the same time, like I'm a storyteller, right? Andrew Kinsman has a fixation with serial killers that might have gone beyond what most people's interest was. Based on the Adrian Humphrey story, it seems like it did. He makes friends with Bruce MacArthur, who seems to share the same interest, and then becomes his victim. It's like a bingeable Netflix show that's writing itself. Like that is going to be dramatized.
Yeah,
like I just accept the inevitability of that. It's going to get reported. I'm not mad at Adrian Humphreys for like, yeah, I'm going to write about that, you know?
Yeah.
I'm sure he's mad at his headline writer for that gaffe, but it's more than that. The story was not respectful.
No.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I feel like we need some kind of like guide for best practices or something around this stuff. We need start this conversation anyhow.
Yeah. Like there was the Sean Cribben Global News interview and he was someone that escaped Bruce MacArthur. And, you know, it's like it focused on the horror of what he went through, not how to make a safer place for gay men to engage in, you know, consensual, casual encounters, some of which may be rough sex. And I think that for me really drawed a line in the sand to be like, you know, the media wants to gawk.
Yeah. I mean, there's an opportunity here because like we kind of fall into tropes when we're not willing to like have a conversation about like, yes, somebody had consensual rough sex. They still don't deserve to be a murder victim.
Exactly.
It doesn't make them any more acceptable as a murder victim. You know, like, can we talk about that now? Like, if this person's willing to discuss the fact that like, they don't have shame around the fact that they pursued sex like that, like, do they deserve the same protection from the police and the same sympathy from, like, they probably do, you know, like.
Exactly.
There's actually an opportunity to kind of like broaden our understanding of humans. And,
exactly. You know. No person's, you know, interest in dark humor, love of serial killers, or interest in rough casual sex makes them culpable in their own murder or deserve to die or more likely to be murdered.
You're familiar with our feature, Duly Noted?
Yes.
Where we note things duly?
Mm-hmm.
I would like to duly note why I have to be such a dick. Jesse, do you really have to be such a dick? I'm actually glad you asked. Allow me to explain. I am talking about last week's show about the Simpsons episode on Newfoundland. It would be so insulting and patronizing for a person, namely me, to purposely provoke and incite a group of people, like carefully identifying their sore spot, hitting that nerve on purpose. And then when, surprise, surprise, they get offended, how insulting and patronizing and disingenuous would it be for me to say, oh, I'm sorry. Did I hurt your feelings? I'm sorry for doing that thing that I totally intended to do and that I totally will do again. But, you know, it's convenient for me now to apologize. So I'm sorry. I cannot apologize. I have too much respect for Newfoundlanders to give you a disingenuous apology, even if that is the strategic move that would make the most sense for me, because I'm getting dragged so heavily on Twitter right now, because I did make those comments and I made them on purpose. I absolutely did not do it to get attention. This was bad attention. We lost money because of this. We lost patrons. I didn't do it to get ratings. We didn't have a big ratings boost. Newfoundland, not so big for the hate listens to give us a big boost. I didn't do it because I'm against Newfoundlanders and I get my kicks by insulting them. No, here's why. I willfully provoked on this topic because it's my job. It's my job to call bullshit on bullshit media stories. The media story, the bullshit media story that we see again and again, different versions of all the time, year after year, is headline, Newfoundlanders angry over use of term Newfie. That is a bullshit media story. And that is what the majority of Newfoundlanders who spoke up, not about my show, but about the Simpsons episode, that is what the majority of them had to say, that they don't really care about the Simpsons episode, that they have better things to worry about than the Simpsons making fun of Newfoundland. And you know, some said, sure, yes, that they find the term offensive, depending on how it's used and who's using it, but like they don't consider it to be a sacred term or a forbidden term to non-Newfoundlanders. And a lot of them actually said that they were kind of embarrassed by the people who do make a big deal out of this. And I think that if they were offended by anything, it's that the only time the media gives a shit about Newfoundland is to tell this story of Newfoundlanders being offended by the term Newfie. Okay? So that's my job, to point out bullshit media stories. But I totally went further than that. I totally said other things beyond that. I also had some words that were specifically aimed at specific people, that I was trying to offend specific people. Here's what I'm talking about. Every time this gets brought up and they do that bullshit media story, they need some Newfoundlanders who will say, yes, this is the most important thing to me. I'm super offended. Nobody can use the word Newfie. And invariably, you will find people who will equate it to the other N-word.
Ooh.
Okay? And they want the same status for Newfie as the other N-word. They want it to be treated the same way. No one's allowed to say it except for us saying it to each other. And I hate that shit. I hated that shit when the Quebec separatist movement used it. We are the white N-words of America. I hate it now when this new American white nationalist, white supremacist movement uses it with this erroneous, ahistorical claim that the original slaves in America were actually white. They were Irish indentured servants. And we should think of them as being mistreated the same way. And like, I hate that every time that it is used, that false equivalency, when black people are used as a prop, where in order to kind of like get across just how badly you're treated, like, they were treating me as if I was a black person. Can you believe it? Me, a white person, being treated that way. And so I hate it when it's used in Newfoundland in that exact same way. And I don't think that many Newfoundlanders at all do that. And I am sure that most Newfoundlanders hate it too, probably more than I do, because it's embarrassing for them in a way that it is not for me. So that's what I was responding to. Okay, people who think that Newfie should be like the N-word, that is an offensive and extreme absurdity. And I very consciously responded to it with my own offensive and extreme absurdity. And that was for me to say, well, if you think that being from Newfoundland is the same thing as being black, then I guess you're sort of equating some sort of racial or ethnic aspect to being from Newfoundland. Like, you're a race of Newfs. And unlike being black, you've actually got this land claim associated with your ethnicity, because it's like specific to Newfoundland. And so what I said is that if you believe in the sanctity of the term Newfie, then you want Newfoundland to be an ethno state.
Oh, God.
You can imagine the week that I've had since. So I can't apologize for offending those people. I meant to offend them. I'm glad I offended them. I hope I did. But other people were offended, for sure. There were people who thought that what I was saying was that anybody who's offended by the term Newfie is a racist who wants an ethno state. That's not what I said. And I don't know what to tell you. Like, can I apologize for you getting your feelings hurt because you thought I said something that I didn't say? Like, I'm sorry that you don't know how to listen to a podcast.
It's called satire.
You know what? I can do better than that. I can be better than that, Deidre. The fact is, I'm a communicator for a living, okay? And I miscommunicated to those people, right? Like, what I was trying to say is not what they heard. So whose fault is that? Is it just their fault, as I was just suggesting? I can take responsibility for that. I think that I have just explained myself much better than I did last week. I just explained myself a lot more expansively and long-windedly. But no, nevertheless, I did not make myself understood last week, and that's on me. So yes, there were some people who felt that I was directing my comments at anybody who is offended by the term Newfie. Listen, You should be offended by the term newfie. It is intended to offend. And it's particularly offensive because it was a way that an overclass derided and disparaged and dehumanized an underclass. And you're absolutely right to be offended by that. And you're also okay to not be offended by it. There are some Newfoundlanders who spoke up to say, I have no problem with this. It's not a deal to me. That's fine too. Both of those things are fine. You don't need my permission for either. But there were people who, yes, I hurt with my words, who I did not intend to offend. And for that, I absolutely apologize. I do.
Duly noted.
What do you have for us?
Well, I have something that did particularly, you know, piss me off a little bit. There was a lot of, you know, like a Twitter storm, a lot of public discourse surrounding 420 Vancouver's 25th year anniversary event at Sunset Beach in Vancouver. Which is like the annual, you know, smoke pot. It's
it's the Vancouver equivalent where we take pictures of people with huge novelty splits.
Exactly, yes. Exactly. You know, it has a lot of meaning for a lot of people in terms of like the fight to legalize cannabis. You know, there's a lot of medical patients that go there that still strongly feel that it's a protest. It's turned into like a pretty huge animal to the extent that 150,000 people attended this year. The controversy has been, you know, at this point, is it a protest or a festival because, you know, recreational cannabis is legal.
You won, hippies go home.
Exactly. And they had a headliner, they had Cypress Hill playing. It's like, you know, again, is this a festival? Is it a protest? Should the Vancouver Park Board be giving this event a permit? What is the impact on parks? So a lot of the discourse was surrounding this distinction between protest and festival, the impact on parks, and if they deserve a permit. What was absent from the conversation was cannabis culture's legacy being up for debate and the sexual misconduct allegations.
Cannabis culture being the organization Cannabis Culture, not Cannabis Culture.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
So this is Mark Emery's.
Mark Emery's Cannabis Culture at 307 West Hastings.
Yeah.
In downtown Vancouver.
Which you've been public about bringing to public light the many allegations, including your own. Against
precisely.
Prince of Pot, Mark Emery, for sexual misconduct.
Exactly. So it bothered me that absent from this conversation was, you know, rather than having a conversation about how you're going to cement this event, why isn't the entire legacy of who's running it up for debate? Because many of the people that are running it are legacy staff members of Cannabis Culture. This includes CEO Jeremiah Vandermeer. This includes Dana Larson, Jody Emery herself, who has come out in a Toronto Life article saying that the allegations are fabricated, in her own words, insisting that myself and other women are fraudsters and liars on her personal Twitter page. And then they gave him, he was allowed to have a booth at the event itself.
Emery was.
Yeah, you know, in a place with thousands of young women, many of which have teenage girls. And then he was brought out on stage himself and dubbed a legendary activist. I know people that were there and personally booed. I watched the live coverage. It was a mixed bag of reactions, but it just seems strange for so many people to be talking about how this event is run when they should be talking about who runs it and what is that in light of sexual misconduct allegations. What does it mean that these people that are actively calling women liars and are still running this event and are bringing this man on stage and are making him a centerfold piece of this event? What does that say? Why aren't we talking about that?
Duly noted. Dear God, I have one more. I'm so sorry. I have a third duly noted for today. I'll keep it brief. I want to duly note that the Green Party exists. It does. It's inconvenient for those of us in the media. We ignore them at every turn, but they do exist.
They do.
In fact, they just got a second seat in a by-election in Nanaimo, Ladysmith. And, you know, this prompted Green leader Elizabeth May to tweet, I wonder how CBC feels about forgetting to mention Greens in their coverage the day before the vote.
Ooh.
It was also remarked that Global News in BC shut the Greens out of a political panel.
Mm.
We've caught up, though, once the Greens got their second seat in Nanaimo. There was a story in the Star about this Green victory. It did not have in the picture the person who won that seat, Paul Manley. It had a nice, beautiful wedding picture from Elizabeth May's wedding.
Of like, yeah, and like her husband's looking to become a candidate. And so I got confused because I was like, did her husband just win?
No.
No.
No, he didn't. But it does make it easier for us in the media when there are wedding pictures. Because like, come on, everyone loves wedding pictures. So they should just do that from now on.
Mm-hmm. Duly noted.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp, therapy online that has served over 3 million people around the world, and it's available here in Canada. And this time of year, we're all emerging from our winter like seclusion and, you know, patio season and socializing, and it can be terrifically fun, but it can also create a lot of pressure. And some people get like anxiety, social anxiety from being out too much. What did Iggy Pop say about social life? It's torture dressed as fun. It doesn't need to be torture. I think it's just about finding like the right balance of how much of other people do you want? I mean, we need each other, but I think that at a certain point, it can become overwhelming. And talking to somebody about yourself, about your social life, about your relationships is a way of gaining insight into what is right for you. It's not selfish to examine that with a professional. And as the largest online therapy provider in the world, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Listeners of the show get 10% off of their first month at betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. That's better, H-E-L-P, betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. We got a tour of their facilities in their downtown Toronto campus, and I was blown away by the heroic work that these people are doing. They are saving lives every day. I know people whose lives were saved, and they just really care about the dignity of the people who turn to them for help. Look, we talk a lot about these issues on Canada Land. We talk about the crisis that is claiming 20 lives every day in Canada to drug overdoses, but we don't give you a lot of options of what you can do about it. CAMH is an option. CAMH desperately needs resources that they directly put into their work, saving lives and turning people's lives around. Listen, May 6th to 12th is Mental Health Week. This is when they need your help the most. Go to camh.ca/CanadaLand to help CAMH treat addiction and build hope. Dear God, Deidre, Vice Admiral Mark Norman, have you been following every detail? Because I know that I have not.
A little bit here and there.
I can't think of a story that we have made it more difficult for the public to get their fucking heads around. I can't, like, it really has been a slog. And now it's done. It's done. And we will never actually know what happened.
Yeah, it seems like an attempt to not have another SNC-Lavalin blow up in the Liberals' face.
I think that is like, you can kind of like ignore 100 other things about it and arrive there and you pretty much have the gist of it.
Yeah.
I'm going to try to nutshell this. Will you indulge me?
I will.
All right. Let me tell you a story.
Okay.
It goes back to the Stephen Harper Conservative government. One of the last things they do on their way out is they fucking well make sure that this Davy Shipbuilding Company gets this $688 million contract. No competition on the bid. This company is going to do it to basically retrofit a ship into like a floating gas station. And our Navy's in terrible shape. There's fires. They need this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little stinky that you don't have people competing on the bid. And at the time, that might have been a scandal. We'll never really know what the ins and outs. Maybe it was a good move. We won't know because like a ton of records and emails amongst the Conservatives about this disappeared, were destroyed.
Just magically.
Yeah. So the Trudeau government comes into office and they're handed this thing and they get a complaint from the Irvings. You know who the Irvings are?
Apparently a powerful family.
Mega, well, they own like New Brunswick and, okay, and they have extensive Liberal Party ties and they have a shipbuilding company. And Scott Bryson, who was in the Liberal cabinet at the time, he is very Irving family connected. And he is involved in some process whereby a complaint is registered that the Irvings are not happy about this single source contract. And the Liberals decide that they're going to put a pause on this deal for 60 days. Now, Vice Admiral Mark Norman, the second highest ranking member of the Canadian Forces, was not there when they decided this, but catches wind of it and also is aware that there will be some huge, what is it, like a $58 million penalty.
Mm-hmm.
Taxpayers are going to have to eat $58 million if the Davy contract goes kaput.
Yeah.
And he doesn't like this and he feels that there's, allegedly he feels that this Irving thing is like the fix is in. And he is accused, no longer, but he was accused of leaking to Davy, but he was already talking to Davy because they were working on this thing. But also he was accused of leaking to James Cudmore, who at the time was a reporter for the CBC. With me so far?
Yes.
James Cudmore reports this. It's embarrassing for the Liberals. Now the Liberals basically feel like, oh, fuck, we're forced to just go ahead with this Davy contract. Turns out to actually be the right thing. Davy, like, delivers on time, on budget. That almost never happens. But they're pissed. somebody leaked. They want to know who. And totally unprecedented to go after like the vice admiral, the Canadian, like they go after him dirty. They lay charges against him, charges that are usually for like corrupt officials. Like as far as we can tell, whatever he did, he was just doing it because he thought this was a bad deal and that there was something corrupt happening. He didn't profit from this, as far as we can tell. And they deny him legal aid, which usually if you're getting sued and you're in the military, you're supposed to get legal aid. No. So he goes and hires Marie Hennain. And this part's delicious. They start to refer to him in code names in their internal communications so that Marie Hennain has trouble getting records. They call him C-34, which is very clever because he was the 34th commander of the Navy. They call him MN-3, Mark Norman, and then three, he's a three-star admiral. They call him the substantive VCDS. I guess that's their play on the Notorious B.I.G. He was the substantive vice chief of defense stuff. The boss. Very cool. And this is my favorite. The certain naval officer.
Oh, that's very certain.
Yeah. Those are the pseudonyms. Those are the code words that have emerged. And that's how they talk about him. And they're going after him with everything they've got. And what does the Liberal Party do? They hire CBC reporter James Cudmore away from the CBC. And he goes to work for the Ministry of Defense. Like, as a journalist, did you think about that for a second? Imagine, like, you're, like, the whistleblower who's, like, you're in at Philip Morris and you're secretly, like, tipping off a journalist about all the dirty deeds at Philip Morris and you're trusting this journalist. And then the journalist is like, yeah, sorry, I now work for Philip Morris Tobacco. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
So, you know.
Must have got offered a lot of money.
I interviewed James Cudmore shortly after this. He says it has nothing to do with anything. He was not even in job talks at the time. Everything is clean here. Nothing to see here. This sort of thing happens all the time. Sadly, it kind of does happen with some regularity. In any event, all of this is hurtling towards a trial where, yes, they want to put the screws to Vice Admiral Norman, but in doing so, all of this communication between like the Prime Minister's office is going to come out. They're like withholding the files from Marie Hennain. And then early this month, like a week and a half ago, we find out that Member of Parliament and former member of the military, Andrew Leslie, is not going to be seeking re-election. He's leaving the Trudeau government. And he's going to take the stand in defense of Vice Admiral Mark Norman. Yet another Trudeau MP defecting and possibly saying embarrassing things about Trudeau. And then this morning, we're recording on Wednesday, people are hearing this on Thursday and beyond. This morning, we find out they've dropped all charges against him. So we will never know. We'll never know any of this.
No.
And the payoff for people who've been following this more diligently than you and I is like, you know, because the last thing they need right before the next election is another case of a major Canadian company with deep liberal ties exposing how everything got all intertwined and fucked. It just brings up SNC.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
It's not something that you want going into a federal election campaign.
Now, of course, this is denied. The Crown, in their statement this morning, this says nothing. This is, you know, as soon as we feel like there's no reasonable prospect of conviction, we drop all charges. There was no political interference whatsoever. So we can all rest assured that that's how it went down.
Mm-hmm.
What the fuck? You know?
Like, yeah. Yeah.
Is there, like, a bit of a trend? Are we, like, it's becoming so clear that these kinds of things happen all the time. It's just the way of doing business in Canada, doing the business with Ottawa. And the only time we ever find out anything about it is when something weird happens, like someone's principled with Jody Wilson-Raybould or with Norman. It seems like, oh, they don't understand how the game is played. And they end up just getting destroyed. Or in the case of like Duffy, it's like someone is venal and like was sort of implicated but wasn't getting their fair share of the goods. So they decided to say something or make a stink. And then there's just like the forces to just hush it up and shut it up are just so strong. And then we'll just move on. Like now it's going to be done like this week. And then we won't hear about Vice Admiral Norman anymore. And
no.
They can go on with whatever Trudeau image rehabilitation they have in mind before
the
next.
Because if it did get out, you know that it would get dragged and dragged and dragged and dragged, just like Jody Wilson-Raybould. You know that it'll just turn into, you know, a cyclone of disaster, and it will just spread across the Liberals' federal election campaign, and it will get dragged until the end of time. So they're going to use everything within their power to shut it down before it gets to that place.
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Deirdre, thank you.
Thank you.
That is your Canada Land Shortcuts. I hope you enjoyed it. You can email me about it at jesse@canadalandshow.com. I read everything that gets sent in here. We are on Twitter at Canada Land. Deirdre, where can people find you?
You can follow me on Twitter at Deirdre, D-E-I-D-R-E-L-A-N-D. Olsen, O-L-S-E-N, Deidre L. Olsen.
Go to our website, CanadaLandShow.com, where you can read Deidre's piece about Bruce MacArthur and the wider issues at play. It's well worth the read. We also have an episode of Oppo up this week. Oppo is the show you want to listen to because we have an election coming in this country. And Oppo tells me things I don't know, this time about why so many Canadians have guns. Check that out on this week's episode of Oppo. This episode is produced by David Crosby. Our managing editor is Kevin Sexton. Syndication is by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca. If you like what we do, if you want to receive ad-free versions of all of our podcasts, please support us on Patreon and we will get you that. Patreon.com/CanadaLand. We do need your support. We do rely on your support.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.